It's a residency at the House of M's.
This is Triple M Nights with Dave Gleeson.
At 18 years old, this bloke started off. The year was 1966. The man's name is Russell Morris. He's had a slew of hits, as well as being inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame. He's constantly on the road, and we're going to catch up with him now and talk about all things rock. Russell Morris, how you going?
I thought I told you to stop ringing me here.
Well, look, your name came up in my little black book, and I thought I'm going to ring him one more time and see if we can possibly put all the bad times behind us.
Yeah, well, I've warned you I don't know how many times, but Jesus, you're persistent.
As are you, mate. I can't believe you're just about to go out on another tour.
I'm never up, not on tour. It's unbelievable. I'm the monkey on the bike.
Mate, is it something that keeps you young?
I don't know. I tend to do it because I like it, and yep. I really like to try and come out with new albums all the time, so it sort of keeps me, probably keeps me young, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, well, and look, you've been involved in the Aussie music industry for, well, pretty well since its kind of, its heyday, since it kind of kicked off and people started writing their own songs and creating their own music. You've certainly seen some changes in those years.
Oh, hell yeah. None more so than they are now, like... very difficult for young bands and new bands to get airplay. Mm. Very difficult for them to get record deals. They tend to record at home or they record in tiny little studios. It's not like it was in the days where record companies would take a band and sort of nurture them and do a number of albums and all the promotion and things like that. Now you're sort of, it's very difficult. And publishing companies would run songs to try and get covers with other artists. Yep. Or it doesn't have, none of that happens anymore. It's just sort of this weird business. It's sort of impersonal.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the record companies especially have been much maligned over the years. But as you say, there used to be a thing called an A&R department, and they'd have people who developed artists and their repertoires, and they were really involved in the development of those artists, weren't they?
Yeah, they were, and they would really nurture them and encourage them and all that sort of thing. That doesn't seem to happen anymore unless you're on a reality show and you're on TV. The record companies think, well, gee, this is good free publicity here. We can get publicity. Let's sign this person. Who cares if they can't dance?
That's right. That's right. And the thing like about that artist and repertoire and the development, what you'd have was these guys who were often, a little bit older than the bands, had been in the industry a bit longer, knew a little bit more about the trends and the stuff that were happening. And they really were people that were able to guide you and help you develop the sound that you were looking for, weren't they?
Well, exactly. And you look at the wonderful family that Albert's Music was with, yep, Ted Albert at the head there. The bands that they nurtured there was just phenomenal. And all the bands nurtured each other.
Mm.
Like the Angels, AC/DC, and the remnants that were left over from the Easy Beats, and the Rose Tattoo, John Paul Young. That was a real nurturing company that stuck by all their acts, and they all worked together. Very, 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 very good.
Yeah, and I mean, as you say, it's so difficult for young bands now, unless you're kind of really on the zeitgeist, like, you come out with a song that's kind of at the zeitgeist at the time. You're just all at sea, really, whereas back in, even when I started, it was you could go to a venue and you could give them a demo tape and they'd say, yeah, you can come and play an early spot on a Thursday evening before the big bands and stuff like that. That is just not even around anymore, is it?
No, no, it's really hard. And usually when we work now, we'll do a show and it's only a solo artist or a duo. They can't afford to have two bands.
Mm.
It's too hard.
Having said that, that doesn't mean you haven't had success over the last, a decade or so with the Shark Mouth trilogy, those albums that came out that was hugely well received. And I guess against the odds went into the charts and got great chart position. But that all stems back to the fact that you had those nurturing days in the beginning, I would expect.
I think, and sometimes the music business, as you know, it's 70% luck. You just happen to be standing in the right place at the right time. And when I did the blues albums, everyone had tried to talk me out of doing a blues album. They said, blues album will never sell. I said, well, that's what I want to do. That's how I feel. I want to go. And that's the music I love. And then when I said I was doing it about Australian history, everyone thought I was crazy. But yeah. It just happened to luckily hit a nerve. It was one of those things that really hit a nerve that people really, really related to. And that wasn't planned. No. I didn't sit down and go, well, now this might work. People, I was convinced that it would only sell about 500 copies.
Yeah.
And because I didn't have a record deal, no one would give me a record deal. And we were going to press 500 copies and just sell them at shows. And at the 11th hour, Robert Rigby came along with ambition and said, I'll give you a deal. And that was it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things, like you can look at the ups and downs of the music industry, but Australia has really sold itself short, hasn't it, on its ability to mix it with the big music that comes from overseas, I reckon.
Yeah, we had a big social cringe for a long time there, but there's also the problem. You know, you've worked with overseas acts, and there's a big problem. All the people go along to see the overseas act, but they're happy to see the Australian act as well. But some overseas acts are very, very unfair, as you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You get up on stage and all of a sudden you can't use the subs, you can't use half the lights, and you can't touch the mixing desk. So you go out and the Australian audience is sitting there listening to the Australian band, which is sounding a little bit, you know, sort of, how's your father?
Bit thin,
and then
yeah.
The overseas band comes on, they sound like, wow! Everyone goes, wasn't that the best thing? The problem is they don't know we're being... having to perform with one hand tied behind our backs a lot of times. Some bands, I've worked with some overseas acts and they've been so generous, but others have been horrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were lucky with the Jets when we the first big tour we did with the Angels. I think that the hardest part was to win over their crew. And once you won over the crew, because obviously the Angels weren't around while we were on stage and stuff like that, but once you won over the crew... they'd be like, oh, you can have a bit more lights tonight, and we'll take the limiters off your compressors and stuff like that. But we were very lucky in that that the Angels were so nurturing of young bands and young talent in this country.
You know why? Because what I said before, they came from Albert's.
Yep, absolutely.
Albert's music was very much like that, and it's a sad loss when that all folded.
And like with you guys, when you were first starting out, what was the camaraderie like between the bands? Obviously, there would have been competition because everyone wants the number one spot.
Excuse me, coughing. Yeah, there was competition. Everyone was, you know, we had competition of who people would be going, oh, he pulled so-and-so amount of people, or they did that, or they got torn off the stage five times or something like that. And we all went through that, and we had that thing, yeah, we competed against each other, even in the 80s and 70s, like the bands, like in the pub rock thing. There was a big competition, but the thing is now we've gotten to the point where we are, it's almost like we look at each other, because we're all such great mates, we look at each other and go, yeah, he went to war too.
Yeah, that's right.
He's a returned soldier. He survived it. So, and there's so much respect amongst artists these days, because everyone knows what the other one has gone through. They know the horrible sort of doors you've got to step through and some of the bad situations you've had to face. And everyone has ultra respect for everybody.
Sure, sure. Now, looking at your catalogue, how many albums are we up to now, Russell?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't know. Maybe not as much as Joe Camilleri. He's a machine. I think he's got 50.
Yeah.
I think mine would probably be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Not a real lot, probably about 15.
Right.
Yeah, not a real lot, maybe about 15.
And you did one last year that you released with Rick Springfield, Heartthrob. From General Hospital or Young and the Restless, whatever he was in. But obviously, when he was in Zoot, that was you guys would have been on the road together and competing at that time.
Yeah, well, the bands didn't compete with the solo artists. They didn't have the jealousy towards the solo artists, which is really bizarre. So we were all mates. I was really good mates with Rick Springfield and the guys from Zoot. They were really good, but also great mates with the Masters Apprentices as well.
Right, yep.
Which was a hard thing too, because it was a juggling act, because both bands hated each other.
All right.
So they weren't too happy if all of a sudden they found out that I'd gone, one of them had found out that I'd gone to visit the other band and were hanging out. You know, I was like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't even, yeah. So there was a little bit of animosity there, but now everyone's sort of, as I said, everyone's sort of appreciative of everyone, and said, you know, wow, you were in the trenches as well.
Well, and I love the premise of the Day of the Dead album that you did. Tell us a bit about how that came together. Or like, did you get to be in the studio together, or did you do it all remotely?
We did it all remotely. What happened? I had always loved Day of the Dead, the festival, and so did Rick. I knew that. But that didn't cross my mind. What I did, I was recording at home, and I recorded a song called Carmelita's Dance,
right,
which was about a young woman who would dance at the head of the processions, because the Day of the Dead is for every year at the end of October and going into November. They will invite, it's the Mexican tradition, they will invite all their loved ones' spirits to come back and live with them for 2 weeks.
Right, yep.
So they celebrate them. They have feasts. They have parties. They dress up. They paint themselves, paint their faces like skulls, and they wear bright costumes. They play mariachi music, and they have altars in the houses, like they call them ofrendas, and they love it. So I really loved it, and I wrote this song about it, and I thought, I'm going to put this up on YouTube. And I'm going to do it in Day of the Dead makeup. So I did, and I had it filmed. My wife filmed it. And I said, I'm going to put it up anonymously. And she said, well, you can't do that. No one will find it. You've got to do something. What are you going to call it? And I went, oh, Jack Chrome. She said, where'd you get that from? I said, I don't know. Just happened. So what I did is I put it up there, and a friend of mine saw it, and he contacted Rick. And he said, you should see what Russell's done. And then Rick contacted me and said, I absolutely love the idea. No one's ever done an album about Day of the Dead.
Yep.
Would you be interested in doing one with me? So he did all his stuff in America, and I did all my stuff at home here in my little back room.
Yeah, right. Unreal. That's obviously something you've been able to embrace, is the new technology. And you know, being able to create stuff in this new realm of how people do it, as opposed to us with back in the day with quarter inch and 2 inch tape, etc. How long did it take you to get a handle on being able to record and produce yourself?
Not too long, because the things are so user friendly now, and I've got a couple of guys in my band that are like geniuses, yeah, at stuff like that, Peter Robinson and also Joe Petrollo, our sound guy. So if I got caught in a blind alley, I would just ring them up and say, listen, I'm stuck here. What do I do? How do I get that?
what button do I push?
The reverb off everything. What button? Yeah. And they would just work through things with me and say, oh, yeah, this is what you do. You've got to do that, and you've got to do, yeah. And so it's not bad.
Cool, and but it is a great way. I mean, apart from the drawbacks of social media, etc., when you use it, Facebook and stuff, as a tool to connect with your fans, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, I do it a little bit. I don't love Facebook that much, mainly because of what. Not for me. I'm pretty lucky, but some of the hateful things some people get sort of sent and things like that, and bullying at schools and things like that. I'm not really a big fan of that, but it also is a wonderful tool as well.
Mm. Well, I'd like to have a one day a year where I just meet all. I say to all the dickheads, come on down, and we'll sort it out in real life.
Yeah. Well, I was a bit like that, because I wanted to say I saw a documentary called The Social Dilemma.
Mm, yeah.
Well, and I thought, I wonder how real this is. So I put a dickhead post up
to see
what would happen, supporting ultra-right wing.
Yep.
Oh, man. I had an avalanche, of stuff. And then I finally put a thing up and I said, listen, I just watched Social Dilemma and I wanted to test the waters.
Yeah.
And those waters are really rough.
It turns out that they're as rough as they say.
Yeah.
Now, when you're getting ready to do a tour, are you in the middle of a tour or just about to start?
Oh, I sort of
just
really
always in the
don't
middle of a
stop
tour.
Going on the road. Yeah, I've got 2 weeks off now, which is good.
Right. Yep.
So I'll just maybe go fishing, because I've got a little boat, and I'll just go fishing and
lovely.
Do a little bit of that. I've just purchased myself a new pedal that I'm going to fiddle around with as well. That's about it. You know, watch the footy on the weekend. It'll be great to be able to sit back and on my expanding bum and watch the footy. It's good.
And now, speaking of boats, are we on a boat together later on this year?
Yes, we are. Awesome. In November, isn't it?
Unreal, yeah. Mate. We did the one with the Angels 2019. I took the family. It was the best fun I've had in a long, long time. People said to me, oh, you know, you get drunk people coming up to you all the time. It's like, yeah, it's just like me at home. I get drunk people come up to me all the time.
Yeah, it is good. I really enjoy it, and I enjoy the time. And but what I enjoy more is catching up with people that I don't always catch up with, like catching up with you guys and the Brewsters. We usually pass at airports, or sometimes we're doing a festival. But one's just finished on stage and the other one's going on, you know. So it's great to catch up with things like that.
Excellent, Russell. Well, thanks for your time, mate. All the details are on our website and on the Russell Morris website as well about where Russell's playing all around this big, beautiful country in the next little while. Russell,
fantastic.
Cannot wait to see you on the road.
Before you go, Dave, I was going to ring Johnny Brewster, but I may as well ask you, do you know what guitar things they're using on stage now? They're using virtual sounds, aren't they? I wanted to know.
John's using a fractal, and if I hear that word one more time, I'm going to go fractal.
It sounds a bit obscene, doesn't it?
It does. And I think Rick's reverted to his old setup. But you know what I think's funny about all that stuff? Eventually, they get rid of it all and plug straight back into their amp
and go,
that's the sound I was looking for.
Yeah, that's the sound I was looking for, exactly, yeah.
All right, Russell. Cannot wait to catch up in the flesh again, mate. And thanks for your time.
See you soon, Dave.
Cheers,
thanks, mate. Bye.
Bye.